If that happens, it's really bad for also. Let's daven did not happen. Okay, Chevra, we were discussing yesterday the Mishnah, the line in the Mishnah, Hakol Kaminiga Medina, right? If you had a chotzer that was jointly owned, keep that in mind. That was the, the etymology, or the root, the ancestry of this discussion. But we had a chotzer that was jointly owned. Now, either it's big enough that one of the parties unilaterally demand that they want their chotzer, right? Eight amas, and everyone will get 4 amas after we split it. They could demand they want their chotzer, then he could compel the other party to split it. Or we're talking about a field that they, it's not that big, but they both agree to split it. So then it could be that they are mandated by Halacha to build a wall between them to remove the hezek re'iyah of one person watching the other while he's using his field. Or using his chotzer, his backyard, and therefore he could demand that they build a wall together. We build it in the middle, and the varying thicknesses and materials depending on each location and their particular custom. Now, we said, how low does this go, right? How minimal of a mechitza could be mandated? So the Gemara said, Hakol Kaminig Medina. The Mishnah said, Hakol Kaminig Medina. The Gemara read around the Dalit said, Afilu Hutz of Adafna, right? Even if it's twigs and branches or whatever, with thinner wood materials that can also be used for mechitza. Taisa says, what about less than that? No. Less than that is what he calls a minig hedyot. That is absurd. That we don't recognize that. And from there, Taisa had his P.S. Even when we have halachas that do defer to the minhag medina, there are limitations. We're not going to accept every minhag hedyot. And Rabbeinu Yonah, and Elias to Rabbeinu Yonah, disagreed, and he said, no, even if they have a minhag not to build a wall at all, in violation of the general rule of hezek re'iyah, shmei hezek, we would accept such a minhag. And Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't seem to have any qualms about the kind of minhagim that we would have. And this could have ripple effects in many other areas of halacha, because there are many halachas that we defer to minhag medina. We saw yesterday the Gemara Bar Metzia about the rules of skiras pailim, hours and terms of employment. We saw kinyanim are sometimes regulated. Kinyan situmta, a handshake, is regulated by minhag medina. How far do we take our reliance or our deference to minhag medina? According to Rabbeinu Tam, there'll be limitations. There'll be certain things that we'll just say, look, that's not al pi ruach ha-Torah. We're not going to accept that. And Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't seem to have any kind of limitation. So I suggested yesterday that perhaps,
So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, how does he explain the Mishnah then? Why would we say both Hakol Minhag Medina and then define?
So Gemara says it comes to include Hutz of Adafna. What you're really asking is, why draw the line at Hutz of Adafna? Fantastic. So the Ramban asked that. I had it on the Mar Mekomis. I didn't put it on the sheet because doesn't add that much to the discussion. But the Ramban, negotiate that Gemara and Daftal for Ben Yonah, he says what he's talking about is that the, Chachamim typically address regular situations. So they said, Afilu Hutz of Adafna. They didn't conceive of the possibility that there could be a community which would have a minhag not to have any wolf at all. But Ein Hachinami, if that would be the case, we wouldn't draw the line at Hutz of Adafna. Just, that we're talking about the most usual case, which is a light wall. But you're right. Ein Hachinami. It could be even a thinner wall. Tosfos understood the Gemara was talking about, Dafka. That's the line in the sand. Beyond that is just absurd. Rabbeinu Yonah would have to deal with that Gemara. Fantastic. So we suggested yesterday, maybe this machlekes is really a deeper machlekes into, our relationship with minhag medina. In general, we're not talking about minhagim when it comes to, how to shake the lulav. That's a different area of minhagim. Maybe related, right, that we assume that things as they develop, B'nai Yisrael are not neviim, B'nai neviim heim, and if things develop, Hashem obviously ordained it to be such, Devarim gedol l'meinim b'mikra, as Ramchal writes in many places. So maybe there is some sort of hashgacha that caused it to develop in this way, but we're not discussing minhagim in general. Let's just stick to minhag medina as we raise the dinei mamonis. So maybe the machlekes really is what is our relationship with regards to minhag medina. We saw that the Yushalmi said about Metzia, even though we have a pasuk about the hours of employment of a poel, we saw the pasuk getting into Hillel. We defer to minhag medina, and from there the Yushalmi commented, you see from here, minhag oikar halacha. That's a minhag can sometimes override a halacha on the books, a pasuk. And there was, we saw, I think, the Masechta Seferim. They didn't kind of put, we saw the Rambam, right, and the Rashba, who explained Minhag HaMedina based on the fact that, you know, Kol Tanai B'Davar Shel Mamon Mamon Tanei Okayim. When it comes to Dini Mamonis, we can make whatever Tanai and condition we want. You and I can make up, you know, to bet on a fantasy stupidity, and whoever happens to win, you know, there's an obligation to pay money. We could do that, even though it's absolutely absurd. It makes no sense, you know, why one would do that with their money. You can do that. And that's fine. Call Tanai Shabbat Mamon Tanai Okayim, and it would have to be enforced in a Beis Din if it was actually negotiated in seriousness. Right? We could do whatever we want. So to the Rambam interprets Minhag HaMedina, and that light, whoever gets involved in the industry of business, Sekiras Poelim, Kinyanim, defers to what is the operating assumptions of the marketplace, and that is Minhag HaMedina. So just like, you know, the Rashba took it a little further, just like any Tanai, B'davar Shel Mamon Tanei Okayim, so too, Minhag HaMedina, why not? And there's no necessary limitations that are imposed on that. You and I can make up any stupid, you know, whatever regulation we want about how we're going to arrange a transaction, and that's absolutely fine. It's our money, we can do whatever we want with it. And not only can it exist where we stipulate it explicitly, maybe that can be the operating assumption beyond our specific arrangement that it was stipulated and articulated. Maybe that could even be where it's tacit, it could be assumed, which is a little bit further, right? That's more than you and I discussing something in particular. This is the operating assumption without it even being stated. That's a little bit further, but maybe we can assume that Kohanoisiv and Noisin Stam Minhag HaMedina. And if that's the case, then one could, you don't have to, but one could suggest that maybe all of Dinei Mamon, I think this possibility exists, whether it's the Rambam and the Rashba, I don't necessarily think so, but it's definitely a possibility that all of Dinei Mamon is in the Chesh Mishpat are a default. The Torah here provides the basics for society. If you don't have Dinei Mamon, right, we're about to see a society fall apart across the globe somewhere. So if there's no Dinei Mamon, there's no rule and order, society falls apart. So the Torah here provides us with the basics for society, and that is Dinei Mamonis. You want to superimpose on it a different standard? Torah doesn't necessarily seem to have a problem with that. If it's a competing system in general, like we're going to have a different court system, a whole different system, right, we do have an issue to go to secular court based on the pasuk being a parashas Mishpatim, Eyal Mishpatim, Shetosim, Lefnehem below Lefnei Hedyotos. You're not allowed to go to secular court. That's a chil Hashem. Kiilu, our system is not sufficient, and you have to go to a better, more developed system. That's insulting to the Torah. But if we want to change one thing here or there, it's not systematic. We haven't challenged the halachic system, but we, you know, superimpose on it some other arbitrary law. Okay, Torah doesn't seem to have a problem. Torah is providing us a default. There aren't necessarily grand religious, you know, ritual, spiritual implications in every halakha of Dinei Mamonis. Maybe it's just to keep a society functioning. And even if it is, we can learn it and then still have a different system in practice. Okay, whatever it is. Perhaps we're speculating now. That's one possibility. But then we saw the Masechta Seferim, and the Or Zeruah quoted this, and the Ramban quotes this, that no, in order for it to be a Minhag HaMedina that's valid in the eyes of Halacha, it has to be something that was established by Talmid Chachamim, or what's known as Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. That's like the seven trustees of the religious community. Remember, they used to live in kind of isolated communities that operated on their own and paid taxes to a ruling party. So the seven trustees were like the board of trustees, and they were people of religious standing and communal respect. And so they established the Minhag HaMedina, then it's valid. If it's not established by them, then it has no validity. And that seems to be where Rabbeinu Tam is coming from. In which case, you know, there might be minhagim that are valid, that come from a minhag vasikin, as we saw, right, from the veterans, as opposed to a minhag hedyot, as Rabbeinu Tam called it. And if we're going to draw these kinds of lines, it seems to me that perhaps, the Dinei Mamonis, and again, this is speculative, but Dinei Mamonis maybe do have very big significance in the eyes of the Torah. At the same time, the Torah is the living Torah, and Chazal are given the ability to legislate as they see fit in order to keep the principles of the Torah intact. And sometimes situations might arise where they need to act, beyond the formal principles that were handed down based on a principle, especially in a principle, you know, in the era of Dine Mamadis, they have the ability to do so based on Hefker, based in Hefker. So maybe all Minigam Medinas are not because you and I stipulated as such. See, you and I can stipulate for sure. Can we impose that where it wasn't stated? That's a much bigger assumption. So maybe that requires kind of a communal top-down approach of Hefker based in Hefker. Maybe that's what that's what we have to rely upon. And then we could say, well, if that's the case, because out of their discretion, and if it's a mini kedyot, they don't like it. In ruach hacham neichayimenu, they're going to reject it. So in the Ramah over here, Oizudad, we passing like Rabbeinu Tam. That if it's less than Hutzavadafna, if a minig not to build a war at all, so then we don't accept it. Yeshamun dulo hochan achar a minig. Meaning that there is a minig hedyut that's just too much for us to stomach. This comes up, lehalacha, now whether or not we can extrapolate from here beyond the area of splitting a field that was owned by two shukvim is debatable. But this issue comes up, to what extent do we rely on Minig Medina? In many areas, halacha l'maisa, you wouldn't believe how often this issue comes up. So we say, just the davar ha'omed al haperek, something which is discussed right now, was in the paper again today, about, the rent controls and eviction moratoriums during the pandemic. I think the Supreme Court overruled, I'm not following this really on the pulse of it, but I have my head above the sand, so I know a little at least on this issue. So I know a little bit about what's going on, and I know the Supreme Court overruled a federal CDC-imposed eviction moratorium. New York State, I believe, still has an eviction moratorium that's set to expire, and the landlords are going to sue if they extend it. But they felt it was necessary to make sure that people are not thrown on the street in the middle of a pandemic. Or we could even go back further, as Ramosha does, to rent control. Everyone here has a basic idea of what rent control is, that, in order to keep the, real estate somewhat manageable, they imposed this, rent limitations about how much you can charge them in. What if you have two parties that are both Jews? So, obviously, if you're in a secular society, you're going to have to follow the secular law. But what if the parties, right, and you can't force a guy to follow what is the Din HaTorah? But should two Jews be, be regulated, be obligated to follow this halacha? So now this minig, or this custom, or this law. So you'll say, what are you talking about? Dina de Malchusa Dina. Principle we're somewhat, at least peripherally, familiar with. So the truth of the matter is, Dina de Malchusa Dina is not all that helpful in these situations. In many ways, it is related, and maybe has its fate tied to Minig HaMedina. There is one similar aspect to it, but there is a further complication. Din Malchus Adina. It's a huge machlokes apayiskim whether or not Din Malchus Adina applies between two Jews, or it only applies between a Jew and a Nachri. Meaning, if two Jews come to adjudicate a matter of dispute between them, do we employ Din Malchus Adina as a huge machlokes? Din Malchus Adina really is that taxation is valid in the eyes of halacha. It's wrong al pi halacha to evade taxes. It's wrong, maybe even, in a Jewish state, which is a further complicated issue. But taxation, mesira, harboring criminals, because the government has a right to, within reason, right, reasonably to prosecute criminals, or to establish currency, and therefore to trade on a black market. All of these things might be, whether jaywalking is included in Dina Malchus Adina, further discussion, but whatever. They have the right to establish principles that are utaivas hamedina. Do they have the right to impose those bein gavra legavra between two Jews for a huge dispute? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe in certain areas and not in other areas. Very complicated. Ramosha in his Tshuva about rent controls, right? Dina de Malchus Adina is too complicated of an issue. He leaves it out of his discussion. It's too complicated for Ramosha. We could probably assume it's complicated for us too. But there's another area, though, of Dina de Malchus Adina, which I just gave you over here in the Ramah, just as very broad strokes. But the Ramah writes over here, Ois Tezan, Shin Samach Tez Sef Yud Aleph, and it's a dispute elsewhere in the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch. What areas does Dina Malchus Adina apply? So the Shulchan Aruch's opinion is Dina de Malchus Adina only applies if it's L'tayvas HaMedina, taxes, currency, establishing currency, right? Established currency has halachas, right? You're not allowed to lend, just mashal ma'adam, you're not allowed to lend commodities and pay back in commodities. That's known as sabasa. It's ribis derabanan. Why? Because commodities are always fluctuating in value. I lend you 100 bushels of apples. 2 years later, you pay me back 100 bushels of apples. You clearly didn't pay me back apples to apples. Right?
What did you say about currency?
currency, al pi halacha, never changes in value. That's a din. Din. Currency never changes in value. 100 shekels today is the same as 100 shekels 10 years from now. What's called currency? So that's a huge machlokes in the Gemara. Is kesef, is it silver? Is silver currency? Is gold currency? I mean, that's the natural currency. But of course, a government has the ability to establish legal tender currency. And that's no geya to hilchus ribis. So that's why it is a huge deal. If you borrow shekels and pay back in dollars, you have a huge ribis shaila. You really shouldn't do that. If you're going to borrow shekels in Israel, pay back your friend in shekels in Israel. Don't wait. I'll pay you back in America when I get back here. You have a big problems of ribis, because the shekels are no longer worth the same amount of shekels that you borrowed, and you can't, which exchange rate are you going to use? And now we have ribis issues. That is, but within, you know, that I feel dollars in Israel are also legal currency, because you can pay many things in dollars. It seems to be like it's kilu. I don't even know if it's called a black market, you know, there. It's so rampant. Maybe it's less than in my time, but Akitsamaisa, legal tender is within the bounds, within the jurisdiction of the government to establish what's called kesef, what's called legal tender, what's called money. And maybe pidinaben, right? You can be paid, you know, pidinaben with legal tender because it has value, even though the paper that money is printed on is worthless or relatively worthless. Fine. That's within their ability. What about to establish business practices? So if it's the taivas, you know, that doesn't benefit the Medina necessarily. It perhaps keeps law and order, makes people happy, but the government, the memshala, doesn't benefit necessarily, you know, from end controls. People do, not the government. So the Shulchan Aruch feels that's not within their jurisdiction. The Ramah disagrees. The Ramah's opinion is, no, Dina de Malchus HaDina is not only things that benefit the government directly. If it benefits the Bnei HaMedina, so Tevas HaMedina, you also apply Dina de Malchus HaDina. He says over here, Kol Ois Tezayin, Dulay Min Dina de Malchus HaDina, B'davah Sheyesh Bo Hana L'Melech Hoshuhu L'Takanas Bnei HaMedina. If it's hana to the melech, that's the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, and then the Rama adds, or it's the takanas bnei hamedina, then we do accept it. It's the opinion of the Rama. So one could conceivably argue rent control is the toivas bnei hamedina. So maybe dina malchus hadina would apply to rent control. Maybe it wouldn't apply to rent control. Yeah.
I think the Rama's opinion is all the more important in a democracy, where a man of the citizens feel any kingship is a malchus. This says something.
Okay. Okay. There are certain things that the government clearly does benefit from, like taxes.
Everything, though, that happens to the people, the government benefits
from. Oh, because it's the tribe, it's the people. Okay, okay, fair. Okay, okay. You're saying that...
There are laws applicable to today.
You have a really... Okay, so you're... Okay, you're a Lishma interpretation of democracy. You really believe that they're representing us.
No, they're not, but people are thinking...
I'm not so sure about that.
They're going to vote against the incumbent government, which means that then they're going to lose power.
Okay, maybe. Right.
But on the flip side, the landlords will be in support, and landlords are the ones that have the money.
There's less landlords than renters.
Okay. But let's take Dina and Malchus HaDina out of it for the moment. What about Minhag HaMedina? Should we just, you know, this is the Minhag HaMedina. You entered into this arrangement. You understood the words rent controlled and, you know, rent stabilization. And the landlord entered into this agreement knowing that that was the basic assumption. Should we assume Minhag HaMedina applies here too? So Rav Moshe said, yes, it does. Look over here. Oh, it says, Vav landmark, tshuva from Rav Moshe. Baro poshut. Shekol elu adina matulim b'minhag HaMedina ein tzarech shiyasa minhag al pi chachmei HaTorah. It doesn't have to be established by, you know, Beis Havad or the Beis Din of America. Vagam. Aflo al pi Yehudim dafka, not even dafka by Jews. The option higu zehanachrim kigoyin shem roiv teishve. Here they establish these principles. Nami hu midi hatayra midin hatayra b'stamak fi aminig. This is din tayra that died to the minig ayir neshev kihisnu b'stamak. It's as if they made it tonight. The Rambam and the Rajba. It's as if they stipulated as such. V'cheinu binyani mechira v'tam shu b'stamak kihisnu shehu kiminig. So he says, so the rent controls, rent stabilization, evictions, you know, that kind of stuff should all be covered under the Minhag HaMedina. One could argue, and there are those make this argument, not me, that rent control, rent stabilization, perhaps is L'Toivas B'nei HaMedina, and therefore it's not a Minhag Hedyot. Even Rabbeinu Tam wouldn't object. The eviction moratorium, there are those that have argued in recent times, that was politically motivated. I don't know. I don't like talking politics. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know. It's be above my pay grade or below my pay grade, whatever you want to say. But I don't get involved in this. I think it's a legitimate suggestion. If that's the case, and it was not L'Toivas B'nei HaMedina, it was L'Toivas, you know, certain politicians who thought they were going to benefit from it in election season. So if that's the case, maybe you shouldn't necessarily be accepted in the eyes of halacha. And there are those that argued rent control, rent stabilization. They argued with Rav Moshe and said rent control, rent stabilization also was not l'toivas b'nei Hamadina. It was l'toivas some b'nei Hamadina, but not was, you know, to the detriment of others. Debatable. Either way, Rav Moshe and the rent control and rent stabilization took a stand with regards to eviction moratoriums. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's been litigated in the Beis Din yet, but very interesting. One could argue it's a minig hedit, like Rabbeinu Tam. There's limitations here. Based on this tshuva from Rav Moshe, there was an article that was published in Tchumen. Tchumen is a journal that's put out by a machon that resides a few steps away from Yeshivas Har Etzion. And I won't put. So many, many beautiful things are published there. So in this journal Tchumen, one person argued that based on this Rav Moshe, we always defer to Minhag HaMedina and Dinei Mamonos. You see, for Rav Moshe, by rent control, rent stabilization. Rav Asher Weiss argued back in a response that no, it's not true. Rav Moshe argued by rent control, rent stabilization, but the Rabbeinu Tam already said there are certain Minhagim that are not, that are Minhag Hedit. And therefore, we have to be careful about which Minhagim we are Semich. And Rav Asher Weiss outlined what he thinks is the Hagdara here, and that is that where it is an area that is, you know, beyond the assumption that the Dinei HaTorah will continue to be as relevant as they were, you know, perhaps in a previous setting. So obviously the setting today is so much more complicated. We need more elaborate dinim. There we should defer to the Minhag HaMedina, like employee expectations. Clearly there, you know, things change and we're going to have to adapt with the time of rent control, rent stabilization. But when it comes to the basic rubric of Dinei Mamonos, no, then... If we do that, we might as well wave the white flag and give up all of Chayshim Mishpat and lop it off. You know, let's just do away with Chayshim Mishpat. So, Osher Weiss cites the truth of the Rajba. Rabbi said, look over here, Oisid Zayin, and the Ramah quotes it. Here, the Ramah quotes it. No, I'm sorry, Ois Tez Zayin. That's what the Ramah was saying. Kohanoise Isha al Das Haminig, who noise? Whoever gets married al Das the Minig. Vinidon Hadavar Bedina of the Kochavim, de Mesa, lo Yashabai, lo Chadom Elezeh. You have certain halachas that we defer to Minhag HaMedina. V'lekha b'zeh mishum dina d'malchusa. D'lo amrina dina d'malchusa b'dov sheish hanog. Melech o shu takanas b'nei HaMedina. Avolo shi adunu b'dina yov de kachavim dim kein batu kol dina Yisrael. If we're going to defer in every situation to dina d'malchusa dina, to Minhag HaMedina, we might as well do away with Chayshim Mishpat. And clearly, Rav Asher Weiss is assuming, like Rabbeinu Tam, that their halacha is an ideal form. You know, Chayshim Mishpat is an ideal form of Dinei Mamonos. Yes, there might be certain areas that halacha didn't address, you know, in previous generations. And there, we should defer to Minhag HaMedina, but not necessarily in every area. So, it's a complicated set of circumstances. When to defer to Minhag HaMedina, when to not defer to Minhag HaMedina. One could argue, it depends whether lawyers drafted the argument, you know, the agreement. If lawyers drafted the agreement, you probably intended to defer to Minhag HaMedina. It's ki'ilu hisnu. It's as if you stipulated as such by employing a lawyer to draft your document. You can't now summon the guy who didn't tire and claim that the lawyer was wasn't involved. And if not, though, if it's two Jews, Rav Asher says it's such a compelling argument. I've sat in Rav Asher's Beis Din before. We sat there for a few days. I've never seen anything like it. We could discuss it another time. It was the most wild experience. People coming in and arguing in different languages, and it's a small claims court, big claims court, divorce, appeal, crazy stuff going on over there. So Rav Asher argues, and I think this is true in his Beis Din for sure. I saw it myself. The lav davka, do people even know what the Minhag HaMedina is, and do they care? Yes, in America, on Wall Street, if you have two Jews engaging in a deal, they care about Minhag HaMedina, and they probably, that was their operating assumption. Lav davka, is that the case? If two Jews are involved in an Asik in Bnei Brak, they don't care what the Israeli law has to say about it. They're following the Dinei HaTorah. Everyone here is with the whole nine yards in terms of the Levush. No one here cares what the Minhag HaMedina is. They want to follow Dinei HaTorah. So Rabbi Asher Weiss says, who told you every person's operating assumption is based on the Minhag HaMedina? There might be many circumstances between from Jews with operating assumption, not Minhag HaMedina. The operating assumption is Chayshim Mishpat. So we shouldn't defer always to Minhag HaMedina. It's something that's in the toolbox of the Dayan. We have to figure out, you know, when necessarily it should be employed. But there certainly are limitations. Rabbeinu Tam said, Minhag Hedit, we don't accept. So there's a tshuva, and the tshuva is Van Hoggis. Tshuva is Van Hoggis is of Sternbach. Same author as the Moed Muzmanim. So in the Tshuvas Van Hoggis, he has a different tshuva about a woman who was relieved of her position as an Ein Bias in a seminary, and she wanted severance. Now, in many frum settings, is a minig. It's a minig. We don't have time to get involved in the extent of the minig and you know, why there is such a minig. But there's a minig known as chaydish l'shana. You get paid a month for every year of employment. Chaydish l'shana. For whatever reason, that's the standard policy of Torah Masorah and all yeshivas. They pay chaydish l'shana. If you relieve someone of their duties, you pay them a year, a month of salary for every year that they were employed. So if they were employed for 10 years, they get 10 months of severance. For whatever reason, in schools in our community, that is not the accepted custom. Typically, they will even put in the contracts of employment, you are not entitled to Chodesh Lashana. I personally feel that's terrible. I've been overruled. I've argued the case to those who advise this policy, and I was overruled. They feel that it's because most employers in our community provide retirement benefits. In the yeshivish community, that's unheard of. So, okay, so there is a pension. Whether pensions have taken a hit in recent times, are they what they once were? I don't believe so, but okay, here. If you have pension, you don't get Chodesh Lashana. But if you have no pension, it's in yeshivish place, it's Chodesh Lashana. So this woman, though, wanted, there was a severance package that the Minhag HaMedina demanded. So she tainted to the seminary, I want my severance package, whatever that involves. And she went to the seminary, she sued the seminary in Beis Din for that severance package. So Sternbach did not honor the Minhag HaMedina in his tshuva. He feels that the Minhag HaMedina makes no sense because they're paying her for being unemployed. Why would we pay you? He said, you could go get another job now. If she can find employment, why should she sit unemployed for X amount of time beyond the minig of Chodesh Hashanah? Why should she sit beyond, unemployed just because she's reaping benefits from a previous employer because of severance packages? She should, if she's able to be employed and she can gain employment, he said, it doesn't make any sense. Why should we enforce this severance system? It's a minig hedyot, he calls it. So he felt that there are certain limitations here too. What about though our case lamaisa? This also comes up, by the way, in bankruptcy. How do we treat bankruptcy? Bankruptcy is a complicated parsha. Bankruptcy means I borrowed money, I can't pay it back. Then I say sorry, I'm not paying you back. It's basically, I ruined my credit in the process. But you open an LLC. I'm not in the Sai Sim school, but this much I know: you open an LLC, you're protected. The entity goes down the tubes and the bank might not lend you money when you open your next entity, but your personal credit is intact. That's no purpose of opening a shell entity, in the first place. What if it's two from Jews? Do we honor bankruptcy or do we not honor bankruptcy? So it might depend on Dina the Malchus Adina. Is this L'toivas B'nei HaMedina or not L'toivas B'nei HaMedina? Is bankruptcy good for the people or not good for the people? One could have two perspectives on that. Huh? Depends who. Yeah, but it might be good for business or bad for business. People take business ventures because of bankruptcy. Otherwise, they wouldn't risk it. Right? One could say, no, it's predatory. It depends probably how you view capitalism, whether that's good for the world or bad for the world. But one could have two different views on bankruptcy. Minhag HaMedina maybe applies to bankruptcy between two Jews or not. Depends. Was that likely stipulated between them? Was it not likely stipulated between them? Again, I think if it's two Koyo guys borrowing money in some BMG's base medrash for one of them to tie in a bankruptcy, it's probably a little bit, personal bankruptcy, a little bit chutz, from what they had in mind. If you're talking about businesses, entities, it probably is what they had in mind. Depends. Everything depends. Minhag HaMedina. But you might call this a minhag hedyot. There are those poskim who treat bankruptcy as a terrible thing, and it's not L'toivas B'nei HaMedina. We shouldn't accept it at all. Halacha doesn't understand, doesn't have any such concept of bankruptcy. Getting back over here, though, to our case, where we started. We have in most of our locations, I don't know any place that demands that you build a wall between properties. They have a minig not to build a wall. Machlekes between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Yoina. So how should we pass it over here? So look over here at the Rashba. Look at the Rashba. Oysid Zion. Now, the Rashba is not really talking about building a wall between a property that's owned in a partnership. He's talking about what if they're not Machbet and Hezek Riyah at all. I don't know anyone who owned a partnership with their neighbor in a field and then decided to split the field, but they have adjacent fields, which is Hezek Re'iyah, not the same exact case as our Mishnah. And we'll discuss, in the next sugya a little bit, the differences perhaps. But what about we're not Machbet and Hezek Re'iyah? Halacha clearly holds of Hezek Re'iyah, and maybe it should be an obligation to build a wall between the two properties once they're split. Can we have a society? Do we defer to Minhag HaMedina not to build walls? So look over here. Says the Rashba. Chiluk Beisim Reish Namaches. Nogu Shaloi Lahak Beklau Hezek Re'iyah Shal Abatim Echatzeros. Minhag Betosu Ve'eno Minhag. You can sue your neighbor now in Beis Din to build a wall, if you would be so inclined. She'ein. What is that word? Mechila, probably. Ha'akpada. This is a terrible thing. When it comes to mamonis, you can be meichel, but here this has to do with inyan etznius. What he's talking about is, Rabbi said, "Tell later on in Baba Basra, the Daf Samach, Aleph, Amar Aleph. No, Daf Samach, Amar Aleph." Gemara says, how do you know you're not supposed to build houses adjacent to each other where you could look directly into your neighbor's property? But hey, you have a window, opens up right into the neighbor's house. There are some houses that are built that way. Typically, we try and avoid it even in our times because it's just icky. But in Israel, you could certainly have it much more. The houses are built much more systematically. The houses are a little bit more erratic. But the Gemara quotes in the Pasuk, Parashas Bilam, Vayisa, Bilam, Es'ena, Vayaris, Yisrael, Sheichem, Ishvotav, he saw Klal Yisrael dwelling according to the Shvatim, he saw that their doors didn't open up to each other. That's why he said, they were observing Tznius, no one's house opened up to their friend. They're worthy of the Shekhinah dwelling amongst them. So says the Rashba, if you see this is an ethical principle too. You have to preserve Tznius. Hezekiah is not only that you're prohibiting me for, discouraging me from using my field, but it's a violation of tznius. So such a minig is certainly a minig betos, and we shouldn't honor such a minig. However, there's a truth in the Ma'ari Tatz. Early Achrayim, the late Rishayim, over here, Oysi Yechez, says the Ma'ari Tatz, She'im Yeh, he was the Rav in Tzfas, which is very densely built. He says, the Kfar Be'yarnu, She'im Yeh, minig be'ir, hochen achrav, uvartzenu Tzfas. MS may Erlam lo Shamanu Vlaboli Adenu Kvias Hezek Re'ia Berachok Makom Harbe. Unless the houses are literally sitting next to each other, like adjacent, Mamish, or on top of each other, any distance at all, we don't enforce Hezek Re'ia. We assume that they're Meichel. So the Rashba seemed to say, if Nogu Shalal Hakbar Klal Hezek Re'ia, that's a Minik Betos, the Ritats seemed to assume that we would honor this minig. Maybe they're arguing about what the source of Minhagim are. Minig HaMedina. Maybe there are no limitations of Minig HaMedina. Maybe we don't accept Rabbeinu Tam. But I would think even the Ma'ari Tatz, probably accept Rabbeinu Tam, but he doesn't feel that this is a Minig Hedit. If they're not careful about Hezek Re'iyah, they have every right not to be careful about Hezek Re'iyah. I don't know. Someone watching me in my backyard, I have neighbors, I don't like it. I would probably feel inhibited from using my yard. Many people might not be. Or maybe even if they are. Huh?
Roommates and inside an apartment, not worried about the outside.
What do you mean? You don't like your roommate?
No, not that. I don't know, not like a
peeping
like
tone.
Sharing an apartment.
Yeah, that's creepy. Yeah.
Right. I'm saying that could be. No?
Creepy is a whole separate thing. Yeah. That's just creepy. But yeah, outside the apartment we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, if you have no presumption of privacy, senior chutzah, you probably have a presumed privacy. Can we have a minig not to be meichel? And Hezek Re'iyah seems to be meichel because the Rashba and the Ma'ari Tatz. This came up in that journal Truman. There's a whole dispute between one rav of the community of Gon Shavut and another rav about whether or not they could compel two neighbors to build a wall between them. The Rav of Alon Shvut Paskin, like this Rashba against the Ma'ari Tatz, he doesn't even quote the Ma'ari Tatz, that they can compel each other to build a wall. Everyone else disagreed with him. The Ma'ari Tatz already disagreed with the Rashba, and so many communities have that they're not careful about this Hezek Re'iyah. And we assume that we can accept the Minhag HaMedina. We defer on this to the Minhag HaMedina. So if Sternbach has a tshuva about over here in the Tshuva Zvan Hagis, where he just adds one other point. And he says, what are you talking about? You can just put up shades. He's like, do it. There's so many other ways around this. that you don't necessarily have to force the guy to build a wall. So a lot of times people build outside, they build a merpeset right next to my bedroom window, you know, and all these kinds of other uncomfortable situations. But he says always you can put up shades, and therefore that you know that changes the calculus. So he says over here, you test your neighbor, Israel, go when I care about Hezekiah. They make one window opposite another one. It should be 8 meters. And you can put up a tris. So then we don't have to be so careful about it. And anyway, the Ma'ariv Tatz was already lenient. So okay, maybe over here too, we defer to Minhag HaMedina. We had a machlokes in Rabbeinu Tam Rabbeinu Yona. Maybe it's rooted in how to view Minhag HaMedina and to the extent that we rely on Minhag HaMedina. But Lamaisa, when it comes to this issue, it sounds like if the parties are Moicho, and that's the operating assumption when you buy into the neighborhood, you knew the way the buildings were established, you would probably implicit Mechila. If you're building a building, anew, you become a developer, it's the right thing to build it that you don't have windows opposite each other. But the item can be my home. However, we need to discuss, though, next week is really about, you know, what kind of wall we're building and why we're building such a wall. I say the first classic yeshiva charade, Chakira, the beginning of the Masechta, that every single one of the Achareinim without fail discusses. Reb Shimon has this, Reb Shmuel has this, Reb Chanan has this, Reb Shmuel has this, all the Rosh Yeshivas, so Reb Nachman has this, all the Rosh Yeshivas are discussing the same Chakira that goes back to the Eben Ozel. So Bissi Zalman, maybe other Achareinim contemporaries of his also have this Chakira. They want to know the following. This obligation to build a wall, the Gemara attributes it to Hezek Re'iyah. All right, Hezek Re'iyah, you know, Shmei Hezek, therefore you have to build a wall between them. That's why you have to build a wall between them. However, is this just to prevent Nezikin between the two parties, someone preventing someone else from using their chutzah or using their house, so you have to build a wall? Or is this halach of Shcheinim, of neighbors? Is this a law of neighbors? Or is this a law of Hachokas Nezikin? See, we didn't get up to it yet. We don't really have enough perspective to put the whole shayla into context. But the whole second perek is about the laws of harchakas nezikin. You can't do something on your property that causes a damage to your friend. So look over here. Look, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Yakpor adam bar samach lebar shel chavera." You cannot dig a pit next to your friend's pit because it's going to cause his wall to collapse. V'lo yisiach v'lo ma'ara v'lo mishamayim. Let's say I want to build a river next to your house on my property. Well, conceivably, that might affect you. That's why we have zoning laws, right? I want to open a skyscraper next to your private property. That might cause you some disturbance. So because of that, there are rules about what can and cannot be built next to your property. It's called hachakas nezikin, because otherwise I'm damaging your property or your interests. The whole second parak is about that. That's loyachpar. I can't dig underneath your property, right? Or next to your property. It's going to weaken your property or devalue your property. So is that this halacha? It's like, you know, harchokas nezikin? Or is this a halacha of, you know, similar probably to the Gemara Daf Zayin, where the Gemara there discusses the halacha of partnerships. Now, you can have a partnership between two people. You can have a partnership in a communal partnership. Like we all have in all of our communities, there are certain things like garbage. We all pay for garbage. You have to pay for garbage, but we've all paid for garbage because it's all in our mutual interest, and therefore everyone who lives in the city pays for garbage. Or in the Gemara's case was building a wall for security. Everybody has to pay a security assessment. That's, you have to pay. Look, if you own 5 houses in the city, you'd have to pay 5 because you're getting 5, much benefit as the other person only has 1 house. But those are different kinds of payments. That's because you're a member of this community, you're expected to pay into the assessment. So what is going on over here? Our Mishnah says you have two proud people own the joint property. They decide they want to split it. Now they have to build a wall between them. And we discuss what kind of wall, Hakol Kaminig HaMedina. But what's motivating us to build this wall? Is it Harchakas Nezikin? Because Hezek Re'ish May Hezek, and you're not allowed to damage your friend's property, so we have to build a wall between you? Or is this Halach of Shutfin? You two are like a mini community over here, just like you have to build a wall for security. You have to build a wall, between your two properties. But it's the laws of neighbors, not the laws, the laws of, joint obligations of people in a community or a small community like two neighbors, or is this like Harchakas Nezikin? That's the Chakira, all the Achareinim are clearing. Reb Nachum has it, I just gave it to you over here. Where's the sheet from today? Here. Rabbi Nachum here explains it. Oysa Aleph. Levaris divrei atos aleinu ha'akim levaris ikar geder chiyuv hezek riyah. What's going on over here? What's the motivation? Did anybody achorein him? He quotes Evan Ozel. Rabbi Blazer tells her, but it's in all the achoreinim have the same chakira. Chaku begeder hach dina. I havi midin harchokas nezikin. O duhu midin hashutfim. Whenever you're dealing with two partners, they have to split equally the cost of running this partnership. Like a gatehouse at the opening of the community. Everyone's got to pay the guard, and everyone has to pay for the gatehouse. Is that what is going on over here, or is this harfakas nezikin? No, you have to pay, because otherwise you're inevitably damaging your friend's property. So it seems to me the most obvious, and this is none of this is original, you'll find all of this in the Achorinim, one or the other, but it seems most obvious, you know, that this should depend on a machlekes between the Yad Ramah and the Rashash. Now, the Yad Ramah is one of the Rishonim. The Rashash is from the last 200 years, in the commentary in the back of the Gemara. Whether he was aware of the Yad Ramah, I don't think he was, but they're both, you know, they take sides on an issue, which one could understand, because you could argue either both sides of the issue, that seems to hinge on this. This very issue. What is the goyrim here for the obligation to build a wall? And that will depend on, well, let's say one has a property that's, 4 acres. The other guy has a property that's, a strip next to him. Do we have to split the wall equally? We said in the mission, you have to split the wall equally because we both benefit from it. 1 minute. I'm going to get out of this to use my, narrow runway property. You're getting 4 acres of privacy because of this wall. Maybe you should pay more than me. It makes more right. If this is a halacha partnership, you should be assessed more than me. You benefit more. If it's a halacha of harchokas nezikin, well, I'm damaging you, you're damaging me, that's why we have to build a wall. Damages doesn't necessarily depend on property size. So then maybe we should have to build the wall equally. So look over here at the Yad Ramah. Right over here, Oizbeis. Don't say this whole halakha of them splitting the wall is only where they have the same similar size property. Even if they're not the same size, when you give the money for the wall and the space for it, they each give equal. Even though one guy's got 4 acres, the other guy's got 4 feet. The mission didn't stipulate, depends on whether the properties are the same size, and it's almost impossible that they have the same size property. It's inconceivable. No one distinguished. Not making the wall to benefit your property and up your razor property value. That I could say, well, if you benefit more, you should pay more. Whatever you receive is what you should pay for. From that benefit, that's what you should give. To remove a hezek. We're making it to remove a hezek, the kavon, and since the tarvaihu b'hai hezeka, both of them in this hezek, kehadodi ninu, are equal partners, the tarvaihu mazgi hadodi, they're each being mazik the other one, usaluke hezek riyah mehadodi hu demesavet, so they each then have an obligation to remove the hezek riyah from the other party, dina do hu diyehev beik hadodi, so therefore they have to pay equally. It's over here. The Rashash goes the other direction. Rasha says, no, it's only if they have equal sized properties. But if not, the guy with the bigger property has to pay more. If their properties are the same size. One is a bigger portion than the other. Depends percentage wise on how much property you have. Similar to the Gemara later on in Zion and Bays. The Goyvin Lefiha Mamun. When we collect for the wall, for the guard booth, for all these kinds of community things, depends how much property, how much garbage you produce. That's how much you have to pay. Seems to be they're arguing about this issue. The problem is, in all the mashmos and the rishayim that everyone brings on this issue, that they all marshal on either side of the issue, is that midin hachokis nezikin, or is it mehuchos shutfim? This is something that both parties have to build as, as partners or as neighbors, like two people in part of a community. There seems to be a stira in the rush. All the achrayim discussed, there seems to be a stira in the rush. Why? Because look over here. Chevra, the Rosh says like this. Ois Dalin. What if one of the parties is Meichel? Well, I don't need a wall. So Rosh says, if I'm Yesh Edim, Shemachu Hashut Fin Zelazeh, Al Hezek Re'yeshuv En Yechon La'asu Behen. You can't go back. Let's say they were Meichel. 30 years later, they decide, you know what? We're getting old. We're getting sensitive to the sound now. I can't handle you and your noisy barbecues. I need a wall now. Guy says, I'm sorry, you were Meichel 30 years ago. He says, well, I'm sorry, I changed my mind. Can you change your mind? Let's say a guy says, tear my clothing, please vandalize my car. He can always be chayzer. There's no mechila when it comes to nizikin. I can be Meichel on the payment, but I can't be Meichel on the iser to be mazikit. So if I decide to change my mind, I can be Meichel, I can change my mind. Here it's different. This is not nezikin, like damaging my car or my house. This is a monetary obligation. This is like you were Meichel alone. The bank can't change their mind after the Meichel alone. So I was Meichel, a monetary obligation, a right, a privilege. And once I'm Meichel, you can't retract. If it's nezikin, even though I'm Michael, you know, that I'm not going to go after you for damaging my car, I can always change my mind on it because it's an iser to be mazik chavera. So that mechila doesn't have long-term validity. If I want to change, you know, I can be chayzer and can change my mind. Here, this is a monetary obligation, like a loan. You can't change your mind after you're Michael alone. So everybody said, what does a rush sound like? Are we talking about a halacha of shutfim? Are we talking about a halacha of Shchenim, of people as part of a community that have an obligation to pay garbage and security and walls? Or is this halacha of nezikin, to prevent me from damaging my friend? What do you say? Sounds like from this rush, it's halacha of mamonis, not nezikin, an obligation. And if all the other people in the community say, we don't need your taxes, we don't need your payment for the wall, they can't turn around then and change their mind. We're not talking about nezikin, we're talking about a chiyu mamon. So that's over here how Reb Baruch Be'er learns. Look over here, Ois Heichera. Reb Baruch Be'er in the Birkas Shmuel also discusses this. Mamish, everyone discusses this. So he says, from this rush it sounds like, V'nira da'birhu, d'mikeva d'mikvar hemed be'iser, v'chalav shibit harchoka, havizeh kamok choloiz tviol amasmech. Even though there was nezikin rooted here, you're right, in this issue, right? Hezek, Riesh, May Hezek. That's not the way this principle was formulated. V'imkein enkan be'en, there's an obligation to pay money. You're not being meichel on an item or an iser of nezikin. It's not a monetary obligation. They had din nezikin because of the halach of nezikin. Nasa lof shibud. It becomes a chiyuv of shutvin. V'alkein mahani mechilaso b'hashibud. And therefore the mechila works. So he says, v'alkein b'din mishnasenu. The Birkas Shmuel has two simanim about this. Oftentimes, the Birkas Shmuel, the first volume was written by him. So that's generally assumed to be the most accurate and the clearest. Birkas Shmuels are known as impossible, they're very difficult sefer to learn. They say he did it on purpose, so people would have to have a melus. Schefter once commented about that. Pasuk says at the beginning of Parshas Shmuel, "Eil mishpatim shetasim lufneim, lufneim v'lo lufneim shetasek shulchan aruch lufneim." You should make it as clear to them as a shulchan aruch. That's the obligation of a Rebbe, to make Torah clear. So Shechter said he once had a conversation with Shmuel Birnbaum. Shmuel Birnbaum was Rosh Shiva of the Mir in Brooklyn. This way only a few years ago. So Shmuel Birnbaum once asked, Shechter said he heard it from Shmuel Birnbaum afterwards, that, if it's going to be so easy, where's the Amelos? You don't have to make up Amelos. Amelos is going to come on its own. There's always Amelos. Even though however many sperm we have to make things clear, there's no lack of Amelos. Amelos happens by itself. You don't have to make extra hoops for people to jump through. Sometimes people make things more complicated. That's probably just an excuse. They're probably just not a good Baal Masbir. So they say he made it more complicated because it's not a good Baal Masbir to begin with. I don't know. But if you hear a complicated shiur, it's not because he's dafka making it complicated. It's because they don't know how to explain it well. But Baruch Be'er, they say in yeshivas, he made it dafka hard to increase Amelos. Okay. So the first volume, at least he wrote himself. That's the clearest, most accurate. The other volumes, He didn't write himself. They're very hard. So a lot of times he rephrases and his shtickluk, and I have it as a separate simon. So you're in Baba Basra, the first two simanim, the second simon rephrases the first simon. So between the two of them, you can try and figure out what he's saying. But over here he says in the second simon, which I gave you after the v'chule, it becomes an obligation of money. He's commenting on our rush. He's obligated to build a wall. Mechila works. This is a financial obligation. Then he rephrases again. This is not like parak. If this would be a loch of achokis, it should have been in the second parak. It's not in the second parak. It's in this parak. Why is it in this parak? It's not loch of achokis. Yes! Hezek Re'iyah plays a role here for sure. That's the motivation why you have to, you know, have this wall in the first place. But when they establish the obligation to build a wall, it's not Archokas Nezikin. They establish the obligation to build a wall as Hilchus Shcheinim or Hilchus Shutfim. And therefore, if one of the parties will be Michael, it's not like you're being mazik my car. It's halacha of, you know, like building a wall or paying for garbage. If everyone else is Michael to me, they can't retract on that mechila. Once a mechila happens, it happens. It's not a chiyuv akarkaf to the gavra. It's not like a chiyuv of the zikin that is between two people, one's damaging the other. The mechayv hu lahachris asma v'gabi koiso hanes chayv mamon v'nishtav nu nechasav v'asos koiso. This is like a financial obligation, not a iser obligation of hezek, of nezikin. That's what it sounds like from this rush. However, though, the problem is another rush. The rush here has two opinions over here in this rush. Okay, we'll have to pick up with this tomorrow. So there's two opinions in the rush that's involved. Two opinions in the rush. Chaver, see the rush, the Rashban, and Mukha Yosef. Each one of these things we have to pick apart. This rush, how much time could be spent on this rush? Okay, but this rush, the Rashban, and Mukha Yosef, very heavy in the sugya. I really, we'll see if you can figure out how this rush contradicts the other rush, and maybe we'll try and come to a conclusion about what the rush really means. All right, Chaver.